This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards are actually worth the annual fee and which just look shiny, how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships, when to book peak season trips without paying peak season prices, and more. So travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Most people only share the picture-perfect version of their travels. The seamless redemptions, smooth connections, and dream destinations. But real trips don't always go that way. Today's guest, Kara Allen, planned a family safari to South Africa on points for five people, then ran out of points, juggled multiple itineraries across different programs, and even found herself in the Cape Town airport repacking bags into last-minute carry-ons so they wouldn't end up in the wrong country. This is a story to remind you that every trip, every redemption, even for a seasoned points and miles pro, isn't perfect. Kara shows what it can really take to pull off a bucket list trip for a family of five, and what to do when it all doesn't go according to plan.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch. We've got a wonderful and exciting guest for today. Before we introduce her, just a quick reminder that you can watch all of these episodes in their entirety on YouTube. And for those of you that follow us on YouTube, don't forget that we do have our audio only quick hits. That's our up-to-date news in the world of travel and points and miles that comes out on all audio only platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. And those come out every Friday. So make sure to subscribe to the audio platforms in order to get more information on your travel and points and miles news. Now, on to today's guest. Super excited to have her on the show. You may recognize her voice as she is the consultant when you reach out, or many of you who have reached out and have inquired about our free kind of points and miles and travel consultation or our booking services. Kara Allen is in the house today. So, Kara, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely glad to have you. And the quick story behind how Kara and I connected is actually not anything to do with points and miles originally. So Kara has actually been a client, her and her husband, a client of myself, my team, our practice from a financial planning standpoint for close to about 10 years now. And super randomly last year, she came across our podcast, Points and Miles, and it's not something I really have advertised to clients, not that I hide it, I still advertise. And she said, hey, I just heard you on the podcast. I want to be a part of Boldly Go. How can we make this work? And once I realized how in the weeds and how much of an expert Kara you were, I was like, we absolutely have to make this thing happen. And thus bore the consultation side of Boldly Go. And you are here now to not just talk to us about consultation on travel, but we're going to unpack when an expert knows all the things and things don't go the way it's planned, what do you do? And we're super excited. I'm super excited to have you on the show today to talk through this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we met back when you were kind of a baby almost, but you still look the same. So But yeah, so physical therapy is my trade. So I did that a long time ago, graduated college with that. And then I ended up being a stay-at-home mom, took care of three kids, one who is off to college now. But I've always been a photographer. So I started doing that. But then we actually went to Africa 2 years ago and I really started taking pictures. And then people started asking me to actually take their pictures for them, like senior portraits and newborns and all that stuff. So I started monetizing my craft and my art. So I am now a photographer, but Points and Miles actually came before that. And Africa was actually our first trip on Points and Miles 2 years ago. But I have been doing it for about 4 or 5 years or so.
Awesome. Awesome. And so what we want to do today is we want to talk about this Africa trip, because I think in a lot of ways, it's going to be very interesting and inspiring for someone to hear how they can take their family on Points to Africa. And you had a very, very unique safari experience, but there is a good amount of things that didn't go right. And then at the same time, there are some unique strategies you employed to be able to get your family to Africa and back, because I know for yourself and your husband, Damon, I mean, you guys have a family of five. That's a lot to fly. That's a lot of points required. And you were super creative with how to do it. And I know not everyone is going to be as in the weeds as we are and willing to go the same route that we do to make some of these trips happen. But I want to go ahead and start unpacking that a little bit. And can you talk a little bit through what your general idea or strategy or goal was for this trip to Africa, this new one?
Well, so I think in general, you know, a lot of people have different approaches to strategize, like gaining all these points. So some people like to use sign up bonuses and they just get a ton of points and ton of points and they don't really focus on which card to use at certain places and all of that, like down in the categories and all this stuff. But with a family of five, I actually have to attack it from both sides. So I have to attack both strategies. So I'm constantly with the sign-up bonuses. And then I have stickers that are on every single credit card that I hand over to my P2, who is my husband. And now we just have a P3 that, you know, is just now 18. So he is actually he's almost 19, but he is our P3. But I have stickers that go on every single credit card so that they know, you know, they go to the grocery store, they can pull out their cards and they just see what to use. So I attack both strategies pretty heavily. So I'm a stickler for, like, if they're going to the grocery store, they better have the right card. If they're using gas, they better use the right one. Because with a family of five, when we went to Africa, I mean, I used 1 million points and it takes me all year. And we will do like smaller vacations here and there, but all I can see is points like draining out, because I know that our big vacation over the summer is going to take so many points. So that's kind of my strategy, is just I just got to attack every which way.
So let's talk about the path getting there, because you're here in Virginia. How did you get to Africa? And I know it's a really unique kind of system. Can you talk through a little bit of what those bookings looked like? I know you actually utilize separate itineraries, which some people might say, oh my gosh, I could never. Now, granted, your kids are a little bit older, so that might not probably work as easily with someone with, you know, two children under 3 years old. But can you talk through exactly how did you get to Africa?
So we do typically go on separate itineraries, but really, if parents or if spouses aren't afraid of being separated, or partners, if, you know, they are younger, you can separate itineraries. You just put, you know, a kid with a parent at all times. But yes, we are here in Norfolk and we flew up to New York, which was our kind of our positioning flight, and which we did that with the Amex travel bank on United. So all of our Amexes that we have, I just keep loading all of those airline credits onto Amex. And so we flew up to New York, all five of us actually, for free. And we paid cash for that one, but it was from the travel bank on United. So that was our positioning flight. And then we flew from JFK to Zurich in business class on Swiss Air. We were all on the same itinerary, I think, by different itineraries. He doesn't mean like we're on a different flight or anything like that. Like, it just means I booked it through a different airline. So I might book like one through Aeroplan, Air Canada, and the other through, I don't know, like American or something like that. But we're always on the same flight. It just might be through a different booking portal. So we flew over to Zurich on Swiss Air, and then we stayed in an Airbnb in Zurich in a little town called Vingen. Vingen, I think, is how they pronounce it. It's a little town out towards the Lauterbrunn area, and it is gorgeous. Matter of fact, I don't think there was any place in Switzerland that wasn't like gorgeous. It was just like a picture everywhere. So we did some hiking out there and we went around to some waterfalls and it was crowded, but it wasn't too bad in the summer. Then we went from Zurich to Johannesburg via a long layover in Paris. So we did have a day in Paris and we just went into the city and we just basically had 12 hours to mill around. I took them to some of my favorite spots and a couple of our family members hadn't been to Paris before. So they were excited to get to see like Notre Dame and of course the Eiffel Tower. And then after a long day in Paris, we went back to the airport and we caught a 9:30 p.m. overnight flight, 14-hour flight down to Johannesburg. And if I'm being quite honest, everybody was really excited for that flight because it was in business class and we could just fall out. So we flew, I think it was Air France business class, all five of us. And the way I book our seats, I'm not really concerned about where we are in the business class. I try to get us on the outside because I don't know if you have this issue, and this is totally a first world problem thing, but I get so hot down in the footwell. I don't know if you have this issue or not, but my feet get so hot in the footwell, especially if you're sitting in like the, if it's like a 1-2-1 or something like that. Do you have this issue or is it just a me issue?
I don't think I've had that issue. I feel if anything, I might get cold. I feel like in the footwells, my feet get cold, but I don't think I've ever been hot in the footwell. I have been just hot in the bed itself, just like I'm roasting. I feel like I'm sweating through my pajamas.
Okay, well, you have just solidified my middle-aged woman issue here. I actually have a fan that I take that I aim down in the footwell because it just gets so hot. But like on the outside, you can kind of like control it a little bit better. But I mean, I've actually asked them to turn the AC down a little bit. And they have, and it's, I mean, it's gotten a little bit better, but yeah, I just get so hot. But anyway, we flew Air France down to Johannesburg, and then you typically have to take like a domestic flight out of Johannesburg. And Johannesburg can be, for those of you listening, Johannesburg can be a little overwhelming because a lot of the porters there, they come and they like, can I help you? Can I help you? Can I help you? And they'll just pick up your luggage like as you're coming through. Like if you look like you don't know what you're doing or if you just look like a tourist, they will just be like, oh, come on, come on. I'll take you. Where are you going? And it's fine. But then they literally will go, do you have any money for me? So from that point on, 2 years ago, I always go to our bank and get a little bit of local currency just so that I have it like right from when we land. So that if something were to happen, but this time I was like, no, we're okay. And they didn't say a word because we knew where we were going, very comfortable. So we got on our domestic flight, which is via Airlink. And Airlink, they're the nicest like flight attendants in the world, no matter first class or, I mean, it's a domestic flight. So you're there's not a whole lot of separation, but they're just so nice. So we flew into Hotspurt, and then we had to take about an hour drive out to our bush camp. Now, I do know that you can drive from Johannesburg out to, like, the bush. I think it's about a 5 to 6 hour drive, but we've just flown both times. So it was about an hour drive out to the bush or out to our camp. And, yeah, so that's how we got down there.
Awesome. So I want to unpack a little bit about this, right? Because you just mentioned going from the US to Africa by way of Zurich and Paris, right? So you did this giant J hook to go down versus going straight from the US down to the bottom of Africa. And I think that's where someone that's newer in this points and miles world has to learn that the travel can be a little bit different. So I'm curious, and I'm making an assumption here, so I want you to clarify and confirm. Did you do that because that was the plan? You said, oh, we want to stay in Zurich and we want to stay in Paris and we want to do all those things. Or did you find that to be the most efficient route from a point standpoint to fly in business class so you're getting there more comfortably? Can you talk through the thought process of why in the world would you go through Europe to get to Africa versus just going straight from the US to Africa?
Yeah. So getting to Africa is kind of like three ways that I have, and we've done two of the three. The third way we're probably never going to do if we're going all five of us, because it's just really hard to find. So you can go from Atlanta straight into Johannesburg or Cape Town. You can also go from Newark into Johannesburg. And I don't know if it goes into Cape Town or not, but I do know that it goes straight to Johannesburg. It's a 14-hour flight. You're literally Atlanta to Johannesburg. 14 hours, you're there. Would be great, just really hard to find. Really hard to find for like a doable amount of points. So your other option is to either US to the Middle East or the other easy options. So US to Middle East to Africa, South Africa, or US to Europe and then Europe to South Africa. So we've done both. We did the Middle East. And either way, you're going to be taking about a 14-hour flight and an 8-hour flight. I mean, both ways. That's what you're going to fly. So the reason that we stop over in Europe is just to kind of extend the vacation a little bit longer. And from a points perspective, the availability is just, it's there to Europe, certainly. And then it's like from Europe to South Africa, there's just more availability. Also, Middle East, more availability. So that is why I kind of focus on that, because there's just no way I'm going to get those flights from Atlanta and Newark straight over to Johannesburg, as much as I would love to do that. Maybe if it's just me going over the next time when I go on a photography trip by myself, I'll do that one.
Now, what tools do you find most useful to help you with this? How did you figure out the routing that it can be these other two options versus someone that's just like, I'm trying to go from Atlanta to Johannesburg. I'm seeing there's only one business class seat availability and it's 300,000 points per person. I'm trying to book for four people. You obviously figured out this other route. Can you explain a little bit of the tools, the websites that you like to use to help make this doable and this searching possible? And we'll start there, because then I want to get to how long does it take you to figure out the routing and the flights? But we'll start with the tools first.
So I use Seats.Aero a lot. I start with flight connections so that I can kind of connect the big hubs. There really is no rhyme or reason. I mean, sometimes it's just dumb luck that I find these things. So I use Seats.Aero. I use Award Tool, Points, yeah, Roam.com. I mean, I do use a lot of the, you know, award sites, the point sites and all that stuff that you can find. But mostly, you know, I basically start with flight connections and I write down all the hubs that, you know, would get us there. And then I kind of separate them out with like airline alliances so that I know which carriers that I need to kind of look out a little bit closer, because not all award sites cover all airlines. And you kind of have to know all that stuff, which is where our consult comes in a little bit, you know, that comes in helpful.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't know, you just don't know. And, you know, you could look up on Award Tool and you're not going to find British Airways that pops up. So it's a little bit of everything, honestly. And then, you know, Seats.Aero really is a really good resource for me, because I can kind of see, it'll tell you how many seats are available, but you can see all the flights. So I'll see, you know, there are three seats on this Air France flight booked via Air France. And then there are two seats on KLM for the same flight. And I'm like, okay, hey, I can do that. Or not Air France and KLM, but like, or Delta and KLM or something like that. So it helps.
Absolutely. And back for the listeners, if you haven't gone back and listened to episode 69, we actually have a full breakdown of all of my favorite tools to use when it comes to points and miles and awards travel. And a few of those are on there that you mentioned. The one I want to highlight is Flight Connections, because they do have a free version that's can be very useful. I pay for the pro version, which I believe when I did it, there was like a, you know, pay it once, it's like a, you know, free for, or not free, but you pay once for a lifetime subscription. Might have been $120, $200. I can't remember. The link to it is in the blog and in that episode. But what I love, like you said about Flight Connections, is you can start filtering through airline alliances. So if you know you have points in a specific space, or you're trying to get through KLM, Air France, you want to use points that way, you can see what other, maybe Delta, what other connections can help you position to one of those airports. You can literally see the mapping and the routes and what airports, major airports, fly into Johannesburg or into Zurich or from Atlanta. And I find that to be a really, really useful tool. So I love that you highlighted that as one of the ones that you use. So you've got a system, you start unpacking. And as anyone that's getting into this world knows, it takes some time, it takes some research to figure this out. So realistically now, and again, this is going to be very different for someone like myself and my fiance, where it's just two of us versus you and a family of five. How long did it take you to piece this trip together?
You know what? If I really thought, like, sat down and told people, they would run, because it does take a long time. And with a family of five, like, it can be overwhelming. It can get overwhelming for me. So, I mean, it can be hours. And, you know, this trip was a little crazy because I didn't even have our return flight because I couldn't find it. I had depleted all of our points. And so I actually booked our return flight like on our way home, which I wouldn't recommend anybody doing. And people probably think I'm crazy now. But yeah, I booked our return flight after we had already left for our trip. So it is hard. It's a lot of hours, especially for five people. But it can be done. But yeah, like, it's a huge undertaking.
And we're absolutely going to cover that, because I don't want to breeze over that. We're definitely going to cover that, because part of this episode is to talk about when things don't go perfectly as planned, even when you're super experienced in the points and miles world.
And they never do go perfectly as planned, especially with a family of five. I mean, there is always a mishap.
100%. Not that I've experienced that per se, but I can 100% imagine. And actually, I have a question for you then. I know you talked about you oftentimes do separate itineraries. However, just because it's separate itineraries doesn't mean you're separate flights. You can book through, let's say, Aeroplan and United and be on the same flight specifically, as an example. However, have you ever run into a scenario, or do you have a contingency plan from a scenario where you booked separate itineraries through separate airlines, but let's just say one airline, for whatever reason, gives up that partner seating and they end up having to rebook or split you? Has that ever happened? Has that ever been a consideration? Because I think someone hearing this may be wondering, well, what are the risks if I were to do that? I think it's important to talk through that. And again, your kids are older, so there's a little bit easier navigation to this, but would love to hear any of your thoughts around kind of the what ifs in that scenario. Or you're like, hey, I don't really worry about that. That's such a low risk that that's never been an issue.
So I do plan for that very thing happening, just in case. It has actually never happened to me. I've never had us separated. But when I do plan, I just make sure that our youngest is with, you know, me or my husband, or even our oldest, who is almost 19 now and could navigate with my help. I think he would be perfectly fine being stuck in Europe for, you know, as long as I was, you know, kind of maybe helping him over the phone or whatever. He has shown that he can kind of take care of his own. So I always make sure that our youngest is with somebody. So she's 14. And then I have our middle child, who's 16, almost 17. I always make sure that she is with somebody because she does have type 1 diabetes. So I always make sure that she is with somebody and that her luggage is with her. Her medicine is always with her. We don't really separate her luggage because it has to be with her. So no, I don't really. We are on separate itineraries, but we're always on the same flight. This time I thought I was actually going to have to separate us on different flights, but I was able to make sure that we were all on the same flights. But I'm okay with that. On business class, in business class, you kind of want to have that experience together. So it's more that I don't want to separate us for that fact rather than, I'm okay with us, you know, going separately, because I would completely be okay with that. And I think everybody else would too. But if we did, I would separate. To make it easier on me, I typically separate the girls and the boys. So it's 3 and 2. But that's just kind of so I remember quickly, like, who's on what itinerary.
Hey everyone, quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode. So I do know when we were talking about this trip a little bit, there was a very unique separation, I believe, that you did going from Zurich to Paris.
Oh, gosh.
I think is kind of a cool scenario, and a little bit different. Can you talk a little bit about what you had to do creatively for that?
Yeah. So when we went from our flight was Zurich to Johannesburg, but when I was looking for award availability, I found 3 award flights from Zurich to Johannesburg, no issue. You know, first class, European first class over to Paris, and then business class down to Johannesburg. But I couldn't find the extra 2 tickets. So I just kind of held off. But then I found the 2 tickets from Paris to Johannesburg. Again, it was on the same flight. But I was like, okay, I'm going to book those because they're there. And then I will book the domestic European flights. I'll just book it separately. And if they have to go later, we had 12 hours in Paris. So I wasn't too concerned about the time or whatever. They would eventually get over there. But then I started talking to my husband and I was like, you know, would you want to maybe take the train? And he was like, yeah, because it's such a beautiful train ride. So my husband and our middle daughter actually ended up taking the train from Zurich to Paris, and they said it was beautiful.
That's awesome. So 2 took the train from Zurich to Paris, and then the other 3 flew from Zurich to Paris. You guys all met in Paris. You did the long layover there in Paris, and then you were all on the same flight to Johannesburg in business class, lie flat, long 14-hour flight. Incredible, incredible, incredible. So that shows a little bit of the routing, right? The creativity and the strategy that sometimes have to come into play when it comes to booking an award flight. And again,
yeah. And just, and one more thing about the luggage.
Sure.
Because we were business class first, so we took all of the luggage. We combined all of her medical equipment into a backpack so that she could walk around Paris, because the train drops you off at, if you are familiar with Paris at all, it kind of drops you off in like North Paris and drops you closer to the city. And the airport in Paris is way out, like about an hour outside of the city. So we took all the luggage, and because we were in business class for this itinerary, we could take basically everything. We could check almost everything because we could check like 2 per person. So we just checked everything because we weren't going to need it for 12 hours. And we were just going to see it again down in Johannesburg, put all of her stuff in a backpack and send them on their way.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. Now, we've talked a lot about the routing there. And again, I think just going back to what I was going to say before is the fact that this shows a little bit of the creativity that's needed. And this is where it takes a little bit more research, a little bit more time, where points and miles is nuanced. And it can be so much easier, also more expensive, to pay cash to get to these far destinations. Extremely way more expensive. We're talking business class, but I mean, you were able to provide your kids an incredible business class, European first class, or domestic, I should say, a regional first class, long haul business class experience on the way to Africa. I want to talk about this really unique stay that you had, because this wasn't points and miles. This was more of a photographer's dream in Africa. But then we're going to have to transition to the route back, because I know that's where some chaos ensued. So let's just talk a little bit about that. You talk about getting to the bush, and you already explained how you got there. Can you talk about this really unique destination that you stayed at?
Yeah. So, okay. The first time we went to Africa, we used kind of there, like Africa, you could always go online and find like sort of travel agent. But I didn't want to do that just because I felt like it was way more expensive to kind of go that route. And yes, we stayed in wonderful places. And it was our first time being there. So it was really nice to have somebody set up, you know, transportation and just our shuttles back and forth and all this stuff. But I was kind of familiar with, you know, how they did things down there. So I stumbled upon what I kind of refer to as the South Africa Airbnb almost. So this time I kind of want, I've been hearing about these underground hides and these, how wonderful they are. And they typically are, you know, at like eye level to like a watering hole or something that it pulls the animals in like water. So I kept looking and kept looking, and there are places that are really expensive. But this one I found through a photographer that I actually follow online, and it's called the Antares Bush Camp. And it is very simply run by a family, and it is a small little reserve within the greater Kruger. And it's, I don't know how to explain it. If you think of like, and I don't want to make it sound horrible, but you know, like when you're going to like a motel and you kind of enter from the outside and you go into like a room and each room has your bathroom and your beds and stuff. So that's what it was like. That's how it was set up. It did not look like that. And then it was also separated from, so each room, there were four, let's see, one, two, there were four rooms. And then one room had like a bunk bed and a double room, and then they shared a bathroom. So it was kind of a bigger room, which is actually what my kids chose. He said, choose whichever rooms you want. So, and my kids chose to actually stay together, which didn't surprise me, but it was kind of cool, you know. So they shared a bathroom, but they had separate rooms. And then it was separated. So the bedrooms were separated by like a little breezeway to like the kitchen and the living room. And then right off the living room was a couple little seating areas. And then we had lunch on the outside dining every day. And then the outside dining looked over to kind of the watering hole. So the watering hole was where the animals would come, but that is actually where they built this underground hide. It's called the Umgedi hide, and you can find it online, and he posts a lot of like his live video and stuff. And I think he's in Antares Bush Camp. I don't think he hashtags Umgedi hide. So you can find it there, and you can see all like the cool animals that come by. But this underground hide was like a photography hide. And so you basically enter through a door. But it's kind of like half underground. So when you're looking out, you are right at eye level to the watering hole. So it's just a really cool perspective for the animals, especially when they're drinking. Like, you know, if you've got the right lens, you can, you know, zoom right up into their little, you know, their little lips drinking down there. But it's kind of like a bunker. But there was no, once we opened up the screen, like it's, I'll put pictures because it's better when they see. And I have a couple different aspects of the pictures, or a couple different like perspectives. I have one of, you know, my son is sitting down there looking out, and he supplies a lot of like some camera equipment, things that you can use down there. And there's a refrigerator, and we slept down there. So you have 24 hour access to this place. It's fenced, but it's fenced from like the bigger animals. It's fenced so that the elephants don't get in. So we're not talking about like expectations. Don't think like we're not talking about like these zoo fences that you see, like talking about like a thin line of like an electrical current. But it's mostly for the big animals, really. So, you know, you really do have to, you take the flashlight down and you have to be very aware. Like when I was going down there, I would step outside if it was nighttime, which is when the predators hunt. If it was nighttime, I would open the door and I would stand outside and I would shine the light for those eyeballs, because you can see, like, it's crazy how quickly you can see like predator eyeballs, and listen for a minute and then kind of walk down and keep flashing the light. But they're just as afraid of us as we are them. So they don't want to come in there. But yeah, you go down, and we had 24 hour access. We could walk down anytime, and we slept there a lot. So we really enjoyed it.
I know we're going to have a blog post up that should be up by the time this episode airs, because you have took some incredible photos, because you are a photographer, as you mentioned. So you took some incredible photos. I'd love for everyone to see this, because the way, like when we were talking about it, you sent me the pictures, the way I can kind of visually explain to anyone that's listening is It's almost, if you remember history, talking through the trench warfare days of World War One, right, where soldiers were in trenches and before like jumping out of the trench to storm to try to make it to the other trench. Imagine you being eye level, where just your eyes and your helmet, your, you know, World War One helmet is poked above the trench. That's kind of like the eye level that you had to the watering hole for these animals. So you got incredible shots of elephants walking up and just these animals that are taking a drink. I mean, I don't know how powerful your lens were, but in my head, I mean, you were 10 feet away from them, right? And you're able to see these beautiful animals coming up and drinking, and your face is just right there. So it's very different than being in a Jeep on a safari, kind of going through. And I know that also changes the experience, because in a lot of safaris, you're going and kind of finding the animals, and you're just going through, you're driving through, you know, miles and miles and miles of, or acres of open land, versus here, you're just kind of staying in one place, waiting for people to come to you, or not people, but animals to come to you. Can you talk through a little bit the comparison, right? Would you suggest someone do this their first time in Africa or no?
So I would 100% go back. Ian was the guy that owned it, and he was also our tracker and our guide. And the guy knew everything about everything. And he, like, I think all of my family said that they would maybe like to adventure to different reserves, but they want to take Ian with them. Because he was just so personal, and so, like, you really got to know him and how he feels about the animals and just a lot of, like, different things. And he's been there all of his, well, most of his life. But it was a little harder because it was a little reserve. The first time, we had no issue seeing the big five. None at all. We go out every day and we would see almost every single one of the big five. And by the big five, they mean, when they explain the big five, they're talking about the most dangerous animals. So it's not necessarily the most popular, but it's the most dangerous animals of Africa. We didn't see the big five this time. We almost did. We didn't see any rhino, which was odd, apparently, according to Ian, because there was a nature, or there was kind of a some guy who had a farm to, it was a reserve for rhinos, and then they released them into some of this reserve, but we couldn't find them. We did go on a bush walk that we did not get to do the first time that we went, and that was very cool. We got to see a lot of things. We didn't see one animal while we were out, really. We saw a lot of birds, but we got to see a lot of sign of animal. But if you're a photographer wanting to go, the elephants are there. Like, they really, the elephants are there almost every day to this watering hole. So, and elephants are my favorite to observe, just because they're always doing something, and you can see their little brains working. Like, as they would go around the watering hole, they would see us. And, you know, I have this one picture that will be on your blog. The elephant is literally right. My daughter is watching this elephant, and all she wants to do is, I'm going to spray you. Like, I'm just going to get a little bit closer and a little bit closer. And she ended up spraying us inside of the hide. Like just letting, and I was like, oh gosh. And you can, and I took a video, and you can hear me on the video kind of scooting my camera back, going, please don't, please don't, please don't, please don't. But yeah, she sprayed us. But as far as first time visitors, unless you're a photographer wanting, because the opportunities for amazing photos are, it's just amazing. But these other reserves have a little bit more exploration area, I guess is the word, where they can go out and they can go off-road, because in different reserves, there are different rules as to where you can actually take your vehicle. So as much as I loved it and I would go back, if photography is not your number one goal, I maybe wouldn't recommend this one for your first time.
Got it. Well, I appreciate that explanation. Kara, we want to start kind of heading in the direction of wrapping up this conversation here. I know you had an incredible experience there. Want to start talking about the trip back. Before we do, any other amazing highlights or thoughts about your stay here at the Centaurus Lodge? Any other kind of things you want to highlight that really stood out to you about your stay?
No, not really. I mean, we did go on safaris. I just want to make that clear. We did. It wasn't just the hide that was there. Like, we went on a morning safari and an afternoon safari. So about 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the evening. Africa is, it's in my spirit. I don't know. Like, I cry every time I leave. So I don't know that it's where I stay. It's just as long as I'm there.
Got it. Well, let's talk about the leaving, because I know some tears were shed, maybe not from the emotional aspect of leaving Africa, but because of how scheduling worked. We got to come back to a comment you made earlier, which was you didn't book your return flight until you were already there. And I know that some of that had to deal with points that you were expecting, but again, mistakes happen. Can you talk a little bit about what happened on the way back? Because I think, again, this can be encouragement for listeners that they make a mistake like, oh my God, how did I should have known better. And again, mistakes happen to the best of us. I've made mistakes. We all do it, but not all of them gets put out there for other people to know that happens, right? And so some people just feel like, oh, I just made this mistake. I should have known better. No one else makes these mistakes. Can you talk about the return trip?
So like we did from Zurich to Johannesburg. So we went from Zurich long layover to Paris, and then some of us were only on the Paris to Johannesburg itinerary. Well, that's kind of how it was on our way home. So from Cape Town, we were going to Amsterdam, and then we were going to go to Amsterdam to home. But what happened was, because we were going from Zurich to Johannesburg, and then some of us weren't on that beginning flight, that wasn't an issue because they could just hop on the flight and go to Johannesburg. Well, let me back up. So sometimes when you book a flight or you find an award flight, sometimes if you go to, you make your flight one like step longer. So like, for instance, we went from Cape Town to Johannesburg, but I couldn't find any more award availability. So, but when I said Cape Town to Munich, all of a sudden, all this other award availability started popping up for the same amount of points. So I booked it. But when you have that extra flight at the end, that's where the problem is. Now, let me say that I would never do it again because it made me way too nervous. And it's not looked like you can get in trouble. If you have status, they'll revoke your status. They won't let you. They'll basically bar you. I don't know if they'll do it from flying, but like you won't get any status with that flight or with that airline if you do this. So I won't do it again, especially at the end of the itinerary. So we needed to get our luggage to Amsterdam, and we weren't all on that ending at Amsterdam itinerary. So basically, long story short, we had to throw away some luggage in Cape Town. We had to go buy a couple carry-ons because in business class, we could each have two. So we needed to make sure the luggage went with us. So we had to basically, in the Cape Town airport, empty out all of our luggage, put it in carry-on luggage so that we took our luggage with us because we could not put it on the itinerary with us because some of us were going on to Munich. Only one of us had an itinerary stopping in Amsterdam, so we needed to put all the checked luggage to Amsterdam. So we just combined everything and all that.
So let's clarify that a little bit just in case any of the audience is lost.
It's so confusing and it's really hard to tell.
No worries. So the way I'm understanding it here is you've got five of you, and one of you actually had an itinerary that was Cape Town to Amsterdam, but the rest of you essentially had an itinerary that was Cape Town to Amsterdam to Munich.
Mm-hmm. Or Rome. I mean, why not? Yeah.
Or Rome or wherever else it was. So for those of you that did not have an ending flight in Amsterdam, all of your luggage would have gotten routed from Cape Town to Amsterdam to whatever other city, Munich, Rome, wherever it was. So the technical terminology for this that you're saying, hey, don't recommend doing, I want to be very clear also, I don't recommend doing this for anybody, is called skip lagging. It's something that if you do it once, if it just happens to happen, it happens. Not something you want to make a practice of, because like you said, especially if American Airlines or Delta or any of these major carriers notice that this keeps happening, you can very easily lose your status, lose your points, all sorts of things. So this is not something that we would recommend ever. But I mean, you had to figure out a way home. It just is what it is. So you ended up having to, because you knew luggage would get routed to a different country, you basically had to say, well, let's put everything we can in carry-ons and then get all those carry-ons. And then in Amsterdam, instead of making the ones that had connection flights, instead of making those connecting flights, you then took your Amsterdam to the US flight. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was the economy cash flight, but which we'll get to that. But yeah, you explain it so much better than I do. Like, it's just confusing altogether. I mean, I lived it and I was like, it was so many like balls in the air trying to juggling. But yeah, you explain it so much more clear.
And I think part of from what we were talking through, because I know we were texting kind of when some of this was happening a little bit before, a little bit after, some of this happened because I know you said that you were expecting points to come in that didn't. And can you talk a little bit about how you were expecting points to come through that didn't? Again, like, these are the nuances where this can you can kind of get a little bit caught off guard when you play this game at a high level. Certain things just sometimes you miss. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I had actually signed up for the Chase Aero Plan. My husband and I both had signed up for the Chase Aero Plan card because I knew that I could get back from Europe with Aero Plan points. And I thought that maybe they would come through, but I also knew that there would be a chance that we were going to pay cash for this flight on the way home. The latter ended up being true, and we ended up paying cash. But crazy enough is that when I booked it in I booked this flight in Africa because I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And I actually saw the availability for the points, but they just didn't post, basically.
So your sign-up bonus for the cards that you're expecting to receive for both of these cards, you've been waiting, you had hit the spend, and you were waiting and waiting and waiting. Even while you're on the trip, you're still waiting for these points to come through and wanting to use these points to get you back home, but those points never happened.
Right. So in Africa, it was like, okay, I mean, we don't have another choice. We're going to have to book economy flights home. So even with that, like, I booked and paid for it. But then when I landed in Amsterdam, we didn't have flights. For whatever reason, it wouldn't go through. Like, my credit card, I guess, wouldn't go through. And, like, that happens quite a bit in Africa. Credit cards will flag things from Africa often. So I actually had to call my credit cards, just booking, you know, our stay in Antares and everything. Like, I had to call and be like, hey, I'm booking something. It's going to happen in, you know, their local currency, because they will flag and not let you get anything. So I thought I had it booked. I booked, closed the laptop because it was economy at this point. And I was like, okay, I'm working on status with Delta. I'll just book a Delta flight and be done with it in economy or whatever. So, and we were out of Amsterdam, so it was easy enough to find. Booked the flight, paid for all five of us, and then closed it and saw the confirmation and everything. But then when we landed in Amsterdam, we did not have tickets. So I ended up having to call Delta, and they were there, but it was something because we were in Africa, I don't know, but they were there, but we just had to, like, resubmit the payment.
So this is just an entirely series of unfortunate events getting on the way back. Now you had to fly economy back, and here's where I think is interesting. Can you talk about the cost of your flight back home in economy versus what you ended up paying to do business class for the entire rest of the trip outside of that very last leg in economy?
Okay, so we flew all the way down to Africa and then back up to Amsterdam. It was, so the value was about a little over $13,000 a person for business class. And it's for five people. So, you know, do the math, like $13,000 per person. We paid about a little over $1,000 per person in taxes and fees. So in honesty, we paid about the same amount that you would fly an economy down to Africa. So, you know, we did have to pay taxes and fees because of the carriers we were flying on. So they were a little bit more hefty. And I'm sure you can do it actually even cheaper than what I did. I typically end up having to pay a little bit more in taxes and fees just because it's five of us. And I have to find the availability where the availability is. So I do pay. So anyway, it was about $1,200 per person to fly down to Africa and almost all the way home. The economy ticket basically added another $1,000 on to each person. So I guess that was kind of an expensive economy ticket, really. But the economy ticket from Amsterdam home, which I don't ever want to do again, was just as much as getting down to Africa and almost all the way home.
So we're talking, basically, you got your family, five of you, all the way from the U.S. to South Africa and back to at least Europe. You paid essentially about little over, so let's call it $6,000 to get $65,000 worth of value. And that's the power of points and miles, right? So $6,000 to get $6,500 worth of value.
Yeah, it was like 60, it was almost 70, it was approaching about $70,000 in value. Yeah, it was like $5,700 for all five of us or something. Yeah.
But on the flip side, that last leg in economy alone cost you $5,000 roughly, right? Which is rough. So completely understand that, that it's not the route that you want to go, ideally. And things happen, right? And that's why I want to talk through this, because sometimes things just don't happen perfectly and you got to be able to pivot, think quick on your feet, be decisive and not panic, right? All of these things all together. So I know, as you said, you wouldn't do that differently. My question is, from a planning standpoint, because you had been searching for this, you've been planning this trip for a long time. Is there any one or two things that you'd say, hey, I would definitely have done this differently, knowing what you know now?
Well, I will say that any family with a family of five knows how to like think on their feet. So it's not as crazy as you would imagine that all this, you know, is happening and that I can like turn things around or whatever. What would I do different? I would certainly have everything planned and booked. You know, we take these trips often and I am notorious for last minute changes. Matter of fact, the Africa trip was kind of a last minute thing anyway. We knew we were going somewhere big this summer, but I didn't think Africa was going to be possible because I just couldn't find the award availability, or I couldn't find a place to stay, honestly. But about 2 or 3 months before we left, we found this place and I was like, okay, let's do it. So we kind of booked Africa last minute, really. But what I did was a little too last minute for even me. If I can avoid that, I wouldn't do that again because it was a little stressful, even for me.
Perfect, Kara. I think this was a great explanation of a really unique travel story in a lot of different ways. So A, you're a family of five. You're not just a couple like Taryn and I. B, you are able to dynamically kind of route yourself for a big aspirational family trip. And you stayed in some place that was very unique and not the typical like JW, Masai Mara, big points type, you know, places that we hear about often when we hear points enthusiasts talk about points and miles travel, because that also means not all of your travel spend has to be in points and miles. And you were able to take advantage of some unique scenarios. Some of you taking the train while others of you are flying. I mean, you guys did a lot of unique things and you had to be quick on your feet and just be decisive and make some decisions to get back home, which weren't the most ideal, obviously, but hey, you had to get back home as well. And I think it's good to be able to put that type of information out there as far as the fact that not everything goes according to plan. And one thing I want to also highlight, you mentioned this, you know, you have a child that has type 1 diabetes. You haven't stopped traveling, especially these big, amazing aspirational trips, even with having a child with a medical need. And I think that can be really inspirational for parents that kind of, they have a child that has maybe some other health concern, maybe something similar, and they're wondering, how can I still travel? How can I do these things? And I know from the moment that you guys found out, you still were like, hey, we're going to figure out how we can still have an incredible life as a family, still do all the things that we love to do, which I absolutely love about you guys. Kara, this was an absolutely dynamic and interesting episode covering your trip, the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between. Before we wrap this one up, any final thoughts that you had to share about your experience, your, you know, anything to do with this kind of overall trip and experience?
You know, I always tell, you know, people are kind of shocked that we've been to Africa, not once, but, you know, twice. And I have told everybody, I guess the bottom line is, if you ever have Africa on your list of places to go, do not wait, make it happen. Because it is the most amazing place that you will ever visit. There's something about seeing these animals, we've all seen them in zoos, but when you see it in its habitat, it is like seeing it for the first time. And there is like an emotional experience that goes along with it. So it's just amazing.
Absolutely love that, Kara. Thanks for being on the show today. Thanks for being a part of the Boldly Go team. Remember, if you're interested in getting someone to work with you on your point strategy for just in general, what card should you be utilizing in order to level up your points game? How to be able to book a trip, have someone that can actually book a trip for you. I promise you, she'll make sure that your going and your return are booked before you leave your trip and yes, everything in between. Feel free to reach out. We do have our link in every single one of our shows to our points consultation, which is directly with Kara. She'll work with you directly on your point strategy. She's been in the points game forever. She's even so old school with it from the standpoint of using spreadsheets and other things to make sure that she's tracking her own points and miles knowledge. And I know that she'll take good care of you as well. Kara, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And for the listeners out there, as always, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a like, a rating, a review, subscribe wherever you're listening to it. Tell your friends. And as always, we will catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Travel doesn't just happen when you get on a plane. I'm Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore not just where to go, but how to bring travel into your everyday life through books, shows, and stories that shift your perspective, plus insights on smart destinations, timely trends, and interviews with the people shaping the way we explore. Find us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or voyescape.com.